At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to Becoming is Messy, where we dive deep into the journey of survival, transformation, and everything in between. I'm your host, Megan Dawson, here to share the honest, unfiltered stories behind my own process of becoming. Life isn't a pretty and perfect straight line, and neither is becoming the person we're meant to be. Here, we embrace the ups, the downs, and all the beautiful, chaotic, messy moments that shape who we are. Whether you're in the thick of change or reflecting on past transformations, this space is for real conversations about what it means to grow, stumble, and rise again. So get comfy, settle in, and let's get messy. Hello, friends, and welcome back to Becoming is Messy. If you have ever found yourself pretending to be okay when you're not, or putting on a brave face to protect others from seeing your pain, today's episode is for you. Today, I'm joined by someone whose work has deeply impacted how I think about authenticity, emotional safety, and the masks we wear to survive. Ashanti Branch is the founder and executive director of the Ever Forward Club, an organization he started back in 2004 to support young men of color in finding safe spaces to be real, to belong, and to reach their full potential. What started as a lunch group with 9 students in Oakland has since become a movement, one that's transformed thousands of lives through mentorship, emotional intelligence, and what he calls taking off the mask. Ashanti's story is one of courage, empathy, and transformation. To walking away from that career to teach math, mentor youth, and ultimately build a global movement for emotional honesty. This conversation sits right at the heart of the Imperfect Level Up framework, specifically the letter E, explore your childhood as an observer. Because when we trace our masks back to where they began, we uncover the stories, pain, and expectations that shaped who we thought we had to be. And that's where real freedom begins. Ashanti, I am honored to have you here. Your story and your mission with Ever Forward are such powerful examples of what it looks like to live unmasked. Thank you for joining us on Becoming is Messy.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. And I appreciate that intro. It's always wild hearing intros, but I'm grateful and I appreciate it. I'm glad to be here.
You never know what bios are out there about you, right? What does the interweb have to say about me today?
Yeah. I know the one I wrote sounds really great, right? But it's oftentimes having it match the internal feeling of self,
yeah.
Right?
Yes. Oh, that's so true. That's so true. Yeah. I love that even tying to your masks already. How even daily, right? Some of the masks that we may even be wearing in most of our world, sometimes they just don't feel like they fit.
Well, it's because, I mean, you imagine, I often happens on stage and I'm like, oh, that's a lot to live up to. Because the highlight reel doesn't mention all of the, I mean, those are like a year and 2 years apart, but in between them, a lot of bumps and bruises, you know? And
I know. Yeah, isn't that true? That's a good idea. I might have to rewrite my bio. I talk all about messy, but I don't think my bio includes enough of it. I might have to put some of those twists and turns into the bio and see how it reads.
Read the other bio.
Yes. So help us just kind of set the stage for today and talk a little bit with us about this current season in your life. What does it look like for you right now?
Yeah, thank you. You know, this season of not only leading a nonprofit, of working on reclaiming my health, there's a lot going on. I mean, I think that if I was to give a holistic thing, it would be really tough. But I'll start with health because that's one that's definitely constantly pressing in. I think it was years ago when I heard someone say at a workshop, a conference, I heard of chronic pain, which means they're in pain all the time. And as a person who was at that time in really good health, I would say, how is that possible? You can be in pain all the time. I can't imagine, like I have a high tolerance for pain, but I'm thinking even just like, how can you be in pain all the time? And for the last 2 years, I've been feeling some pain that it almost never goes away. And it's almost like it plays in the background of my mind, right? Wow. When I'm not busy with other things, it's louder. If I keep myself busy, then I don't necessarily notice it as much, but it's always happening, right?
Yes,
I stand up.
Yes. So
that's a real present thing. Students the other day, as a young person, I never could have imagined what that was like. But now as a person who is experiencing it, oh man, the level of empathy went up so much for that person because I just didn't understand it. It's not that I didn't want to understand.
Yes. Oh, thank you for that. Yes. Yeah. That resonates so strongly with me because I'm one of those people that was born and caught infection at birth that wreaked havoc on all of my joints. I don't know a life without pain. That's only my experience. And about 10 or so years ago, I had my left hip replaced and I couldn't believe what a joint felt like without pain. It was like the opposite of what you're describing, where I was like, wow. But it also gave me empathy, understanding that people didn't understand me. Because when I felt what it felt like, I'm like, wow, this is what it feels like to not have pain. It's just my normal. It is what it is. Yes. Offline, if you ever need any tips or anything, you want to talk about a life with pain and the ways that I navigate that, I would be happy to share with you.
Man, well, the answer is yes.
Yeah. Those of us that have dealt with it a while, we just have some strategies just to be able to navigate life because a lot of days this wears you down. I'm sorry that you're living that. And I hope that you get some peace and calm your nerves a bit to be able to navigate and shine as bright as you do.
Thank you for that. Imagine how many people walk around us who are going through stuff that would never be visible.
Definitely. Like, it's so true.
First time I saw somebody, I saw a video on YouTube where this person was getting on somebody's case for parking in a handicap stall. And then the person got out of the car and said, look at you, you're walking fine. Why are you parking in that spot?
Yeah.
And the person, and I was like, and then my first thought was like, what's happening? And I mean, it's a video on YouTube, so you just kind of end the story. And then that person says, you can't see the pain I'm dealing with. Just because I can walk on my two legs doesn't mean that it's not something happening internally that you can't see. And I realized right in that moment, like, oh, I was about to be judging too, because the outside appearance appears to be all okay.
That's
right. I think that's where we get confused and we get stuck. And so, you know, we talk about this today in my life, I think the pain piece and really doing some work on detox, right? Like I think at a young age, I turned to food for comfort.
Yep.
Like all the trauma, the stuff that I was going through, because I was a big kid, always a stocky kid, no one's going to say anything about you have a big appetite. So I just had a big appetite all the time. So it was like, oh, he's a big kid. And I was like, okay, yeah, give me some more of that. You know, give me a double serving. Give me the adult serving. Because food was a safe haven to not deal with all the stuff that I was kind of ignoring happening inside. And so food addiction is a big part of my journey as well. When I did this detox, really knowing that I got to drop some weight because the pain on my hips was so bad, but chiropractor said, you know what? I can't make this easy on you. I'm just going to have to tell you, you got to lose some of this weight. And I knew that. And I was already planning to do this detox. And I started the detox as plant-based. So that means no flour, no sugar, which are my top.
I hear you.
And don't even put flour and sugar together. I mean, I could do without bread. And I don't need to eat.
Same. Sugar is in everything.
Everything.
I'm a sauce girl. I don't necessarily need sweet food as much anymore. I'm a savory girl, but yeah, I like my sauces. And I'll tell you, there's rarely a good sauce that doesn't have sugar in it.
Man, everything.
It is hard. Yeah.
Lather. Oh,
I
even
empathize
in the peanut
with
butter
that.
Is like in the peanut butter.
Right? Peanut butter. Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. Everything. And fruit. But I know it's healthy sugars, but still, those of us that are working on weight and helping our joints, so you have to limit that too.
So imagine I have this alkaline diet. Wow. I have to navigate 30 days. And then what happens when there's a day where I'm used to like Friday after work going to just veg out on, not vegetables, veg out on a burger, pie, and now I'm like, oh no, I'm not doing that no more. So then what do you do with all this stuff you're in the running? And you said you got to face it.
And it's hard.
Because there's only so much that a zucchini can do for you in the moment.
I know. It just makes me feel hungrier. I feel like, so my newest friend has become, I love those protein powders that are like clear. So it's like I have a lemon one and a strawberry one. And those are great. I just throw that in smoothies. And that powder has been a lifesaver just to be able to get enough nutrients without eating all the bad stuff. Because sitting down and eating a bunch of veggies and salad, it just doesn't do it for me.
30 days of it. 30 days where you made a commitment. Now, look, no one's going to know, right?
Oh, no, of course. But it's your body will, yeah.
But I'm going to know, right?
Yeah, hip's going to know.
It's going to continue knowing. And so finishing the 30 days has been really exciting. I finished on the 30th of September.
Yes, congrats.
And I was excited to go another 30 days of plant-based.
Oh, because you made it through Oh, that's so awesome to start over again. Wow. You're starting to get into habit-forming territory. So that's exciting.
This is what we need in this season, right?
Yes,
and
that's
I know
there's
still what's going to happen is on those hard days, like when I want to run to... So I remember one, like, three-day period during this last month where... I was on my phone way too much. And I was like, what are you doing? Well, because there was nothing else to run to. I'm not running to the normal comforts of, I'm not going to the bar. I'm not going to the pie shop. I'm not going to the burger shop. I'm like, so now I'm in another addiction.
Yep.
So you go from one addiction to another and it's like, okay, what am I running from? What am I avoiding? What deeper healing needs to happen that I'm not addressing? And so that's been sort of the journey. So
yes,
that's what's really fitting right now.
That's a great question. I think anytime you find yourself mindlessly consuming food, mindlessly scrolling, just pausing and asking, what are you healing? What are you trying to avoid? I think is such a great way to pause and reflect. And so with that in mind, reflecting backwards, every journey has a messy path. Walk us through a little bit of the twists and turns of young you, your childhood, and just anything that stands out as pivotal points in your story.
Well, it started before I was born. You know, my mom was 22 years old. She was a college student. My dad died 3 months before I was born. My mom loved my dad, and he loved my mom. And, you know, he'd asked her to marry him, but she was like, I'm going to finish college first. You know, he was older. And I realized that before I was born, was showing up here on the planet, I was a very sensitive kid. Like all those chemicals of stress and sadness and grief got passed down to me in the womb in those last 3 months. And I show up here in Oakland, California, a city where, you know, men are not without feelings at all. If you have feelings, you better not show them.
Yeah.
You suck it up, right? So you're too soft, you're too kind, you're too gentle, you're too friendly, you're too emotional, right? But all I feel is emotions. I feel stuff. And sometimes, like, what's wrong with me? You didn't see that guy just fall over there? That's not funny, right? That's like, he's hurting, right? And I think that those things that caused me to be a big feeler weren't accepted or respected growing up. And so I turned them off. Then I became really angry. The elementary school, I'm getting suspended all the time, fighting all the time. I never started a fight. I'm not into fighting. I don't even like fighting. But there's rules in my community about what it means to be a kid who fights. Like, you let somebody pick on you and you don't do anything, it's going to keep happening. Or you let somebody pick on you and you go tell the teacher, or you're a snitch. And now everybody's going, you let it keep happening. Oh, now forever, everyone else will now think they can pick on you. So you have an option. You either become a person who is now full-time dealing with the repercussions of letting it go that one or two times, or you have to become the monster who they're trying to create you into being. And I became the little monster. And so my mom was like, what's wrong with you, boy? Like, how are you going to suspend it every other week? What's going on with, why is your friend, who you say is your friend, Eric, how are you and him fighting every 2 weeks? You want to go spend at his house. And then next week y'all having a fight, right? Well, because those friendships were loose and limited, right? They can only go so deep. Because once you get too friendly with a friend, they got to put on a fight with you to make sure that, there's nothing in there besides I'll beat his, you know, all the language that happened with boys and that kind of emotional baggage that happens. And I realized, this is wild, right? But at home, I'm a nurturer. There's no father in my home. I'm helping raise my siblings. I'm a nurturer. I'm very domesticated. I'm a cook, cleaner, dishwasher, clothes folder, all of it. Wall washer. What do you want to do?
But the way you brought that to the world, when you were listing the things, you're too sensitive, you're too domesticated. To me, it bubbles down to feeling like they're saying you're too you. So at that, when you started getting those masks on, right?
That's
and
right.
So you start having those two dual personalities home and out in the world, you know,
that's right.
At what point, how did you start realizing that you were wearing a mask yourself out in the world?
I would say middle school probably is when it, well, I don't think I realized a mask till like 30 years later.
Yeah, yeah.
I would say the long time after that. I think what ended up happening was when I finally got my act together, it was in middle school.
Yep.
My English teacher was like, I was in detention. It wasn't my fault. It was the guy behind me. It was his fault. But
is anybody in
detention?
Does anybody ever say it's their fault?
All I know is he put a tag in my chair and I yelled. He's like, don't be
yelling at my son. I think my son was in maybe 3 fights in school and none of them were his fault.
I think you need them.
Yeah.
Middle
it was school.
She said to me, and I was ignoring her. I was already mad because I was in detention. First of all, the guy who put a tack in my chair should be here in detention, not me. But I'm the one who yelled out because I was in pain. And so now I'm like, I'm never talking to her again. So I'm in my posture. I'm like, I ain't talking to her again.
Yeah.
You're probably staring in the corner of the room and she's trying to talk to me. And I'm like, whatever. I'm in your stupid detention. I ain't got to talk to you. And then she says something like, Shanti, listen, I know that you're sad that your father died before you were born.
Wow.
Now I'm getting mad, right?
Yeah, of course.
Because she's talking about my personal business, right?
Yep.
Like, I used to like this teacher. I mean, it was like my favorite teacher, but now she's talking about my personal business. Now I'm getting more.
Wow.
And then she said, but life doesn't give you what you want. Life gives you what you get. Mm-hmm. You got to make the most of it.
Yep.
And I realized that up until that point, because I had been using anger to cover sadness, loneliness, isolation, not enoughness, because I didn't have any other emotional tools, everything got turned into anger.
Yep.
And that only goes you so far. It actually doesn't get you very far, but to a man who has only a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So certain situations that need a little finessing, a little tightening, a little sanding, you're hammering it. And you're like, dude, you just ruined a whole good relationship because you needed a little sanding and a little bit of tweaking and you hammer it up because you have no other tools.
Right.
Wow. I realized that in detention that day, she changed my life. And I didn't let her know that. I was like, I'm never talking to her again. I walked out of there, but I heard it. And
wow,
I'm like,
so
why
good.
Am I acting like a... And that changing my perspective of like, you're not a dumb kid. You're just trying to fit into these kids who don't even really care about you. You're trying to impress them and your life is going to be thrown away. Like, do you want to make your father proud or you want me looking down and saying, look at my knucklehead son acting a fool. And I really decided that day that I want him to be proud. I don't know what he wanted me to be. He didn't leave a book. He didn't leave a notes. He didn't leave a letter. But I was clear that day that I wanted him to be proud. And so from that day, I was like, maybe it was a week later, 2 weeks later.
Of course.
My shift happened because I was like, okay, then I need to show up like I'm fully capable. And I was fully capable. When I was in English class pretending like I couldn't read, it wasn't because I didn't know how to read.
No,
it was because I don't want people to make fun of me that I read so well. And then they start calling me all these names.
Of course, yes. When you start wearing those masks and numbing yourself, you can't like separate it out. It's like you just put a shield around everything. You know, and so you don't let any good out. And I love the story of that teacher. I think the adults that see people and see through their armor and help, I just think it's so magical to think that person did that for you. And now all of the boys that you've grown up to be able to do that for is incredible. And I think that anger has just been misunderstood for so long. And for now, I think it's one of our core problems in our society is how many wounded people we have that are hurting so deeply inside and just don't know how to heal the hurt. So, man, so I thought, what a powerful moment. Walk us through, fast forward us a little bit. So you have this huge turning point in middle school. That is incredible. So then how does that, what does your trajectory look like then bringing you into high school? Get us to engineering. Give us some steps. Like, how did your path look?
Yeah, so after that, I was fast-tracked. I was like, okay, I'm going to college. So I went to high school down the street. I had to go to high school early. Like, I would leave my school at the lunchtime to go take a math class at the high school because the only way I was going to get to calculus was I had to get another class in. So the only way to do it was to start early. Then it was like wait, who is this kid who used to just act a fool here? And now he's got to leave school early to go down to the high school to take an extra math class. I had to go down there and interview with the teachers to see if I was mature enough to handle it. My math skills were amazing. But, you know, so it was a journey of like, I got to high school. I'm on track. I want to go to college. Don't know really where I want to be, but I joined this program called MESA, which is Math, Engineering, and Science Achievement. And I learned about what engineering was. And I was like, oh, I'm good at math. I like science. Civil engineering is what I want to do. So graduated, went to Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, one of the top engineering schools.
Graduated. What a difference, man. Thinking of you in that detention and then here you are. Man. It's such a great school.
Night and day. It was a night and day. I think some teachers were confused. They're like, Shanti, are you okay? Is everything okay with you? Like, what's going on? Are you doing work? Like, you're paying attention, right? Like, every discussion is not a fight, you know? I was like, I probably didn't have an answer for them. I was just like, I don't know. It was never that the work was hard.
Yeah.
So what happened was because I was not doing much work before, everyone's like, oh, it must be so hard for you or whatever the resistance is. And so that when I left to be an engineer, I was clear that I want to be rich.
Yeah.
Because I know poor is not fun, you know? And my mom didn't want to be poor. My mom was a very proud woman. But the fact that she's now trying to figure out this life, there's a new life on her own. It changed a lot of things. And so that journey of like going to college, graduating as an engineer and realizing, oh, this is what it's like to have all your bills at the end of the month. Like, and I got money left over? What do you mean? All right. You got half the month to go. And I still, I got another check coming. Right. And
wow.
So it was a new life of like,
of course, yeah.
I'm used to us in my house. It was like, you borrow a little on that one, you pay a little on that. You borrow a little on that.
Yep,
mom was
yep.
a teacher. So she only got paid once a month. But by the time half of the next month came up, you're at the bottom of the bag of everything, you know?
I grew up like that, too. I can relate to that. Yeah, paying gas, but like,
man.
And, you know?
Just soggy cornflakes.
Yeah.
They get soggy within 30 seconds. You know, I was like, that. It was I might want that life. So, hey, you're going to make a lot of money. You're going to live happily ever after. That was the plan.
That's right. So then how do you hit that dream? You're living this different life, then how do you walk away from that? What triggered you to do that?
So there's a lot of little moments happening along the journey. I got invited to tutor on Saturday mornings at this program called Upward Bound at Mills College in Oakland. And I was like, Saturday mornings? I don't even see Saturday mornings, you know? I'm at Friday night. I'm at every happy hour, you know what I'm saying? We don't miss a happy hour as an engineer with money and living in the Bay Area in a big city. I'm like, we go and enjoy the fruits of this labor, you know? And I started, like, I was just partying all the time. So when my buddy asked me to tutor, I was like, Saturday mornings? I can't be waking up Saturday morning. I don't even come home till 4. You start tutoring at 8 o'clock in the morning, that ain't going to happen, you know? And so I realized that him inviting me was a call, but I was like, look, you got to find somebody else. But I'll give you 2 months. I sacrificed 2 months of partying on Friday night for you. You got to find somebody else. And I realized after that first week, I was invested.
Wow.
I was invested by a kid who showed up late and who had the audacity to like try and waste time in this program that he had opportunity to do amazing things, you know? And so I was like, it was like one of the moments of like, oh, I see what's happening here. I'm getting too invested. So I kind of, I worked there for a couple of, like maybe 2 years, I think, on Saturday school for them. And then I got invited to this other program, this other company called Sylvan Learning Centers, like a Huntington Learning Center kind of family of after school learnings. And then this kid walked in one day having trouble with algebra, multiplying polynomials. And I literally, I saw a light, right? I helped him with this problem. I said, can I show you a shortcut? He's like, shortcut? He hates algebra. So I'm like, look, don't, you can hate it, but try and let that go because you just got to be able to do it. You can hate it all you want, but don't keep reminding yourself you hate it. Just do it, right? You know what I'm saying? So like we did this shortcut and I was like, okay, you try it. And he tried it and he asked me, is that the right answer? I said, well, I don't know. Look in the back of the book. You know, the odd answers are all in the back of the book. He goes in the back of the book. He looks, he's like, and I literally saw a moment, like almost a light come out of the book. He's like playing. I saw butterflies. It was like the one scene in the movie where it's like magical happened.
Yeah, giving me goosebumps.
Oh, man. You know what that meant to me in that moment? That meant, this is what you should be doing for the rest of your life.
Yeah, that's what I was, that's why I have goosebumps. I was just feeling like there was that hug from the universe just being like, here's your path. You know, those moments that just lights up for you and it's just, this is your path.
I got an interesting part of the story. You know what happened? I quit the next day.
Oh.
Because wait a minute. Ashanti's not supposed to be no teacher.
Wow.
I'm just doing it for extra pocket change.
Yes. This is going to derail your profit path, man.
Oh, this is not going to take me to riches.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I want a trajectory to become rich, right?
Yeah.
This is like teaching, even tutoring on the side is not how it's going to happen. And I didn't know, like, leave them hanging. You know,
I understand. Yes.
But it was like a clear that I got to get out of here.
Yeah. I'm getting to.
That causes the barriers to get even louder.
That's how
it happened.
That's so true. I think that's such a powerful, like, for listeners, because there's listeners right now that they've had a little bit of pieces of that calling. And anytime I've had something like that, it's never been easy. It's never been like, oh yeah, I'll just do this. It's always, are you kidding me? But it's like your gut knows. And so I'm now so excited to hear now you took the pause, which so many of us do, because it's scary. It's scary to take that answer.
Right.
Where did your story take you from there?
So then I changed jobs because the cinema learning scene was in the bottom floor of my engineering job was upstairs. So I would leave and see them every day. So I ended up just changing jobs. I drove an hour and a half the opposite direction every day, realizing I'm running from this thing. Why would anybody drive an hour and a half each way to work? I never understood that until I was doing it. I'm like, this is the dumbest thing ever. Like, I hate traffic. I hate local down the street in the grocery store traffic. Let's drive in an hour and a half traffic. And I realize, oh my God, I'm running. But I'm also like, I'm making more money now. So for a moment, for a little while, several thousand dollars more will satisfy you.
You start making those trade-offs.
The trade-offs, right?
Yeah.
For the money.
Right.
So then, but ultimately I realized, I mean, it was a long story, but the fast forward is I go on vacation. I'm on a big project, the biggest project in San Jose history at the time. And all of a sudden, while I'm on vacation, my building catches on fire. So the building that I'm working on catches on fire. I come back. Now, when you have a big construction project that catches on fire, that's not less job security. That's more job security mostly because now you have a fire project and now you have the regular project. So I could have stayed on that project for years. And it was something I was saying, okay, you ready? You ready for all the madness you're going to do to clean up the mess that this building has made in the world, but now in your own life? And I was like, oh, man. And I'd already applied for grad school just in the quietness, secretness of my life, I applied to this graduate school program. when I got in, like literally it was like around that time I got in and I'm like, no way. And then I went back to school and became a teacher.
Wow.
And that's incredible.
I think you're dropping a lot of lessons, I think, for people. Because the other one is whenever you catch yourself being like that dream, oh man, do I feel like dealing with this? Just check in with yourself about that, because it's telling you something. Not that everybody can just walk away from their job. I get that's a very privileged thing to be able to do eventually. However, you can take steps to address that. So finally, just listening. It's like that the calling's not going to go away. So you might as well. You don't need more buildings to burn down. Let's just answer this calling.
I thought it was going to go away. You imagine? I thought like it was like, okay, if you go and like double down on this thing that you're supposed to want to do, it almost makes it feel like you are somehow denying what you.
Yep.
And I think that what happened was, you know, when I decided to get accepted to grad school, it was like, well, look, if nothing else, I'll do like a Peace Corps, right? I'm going to go 2 years, get out of my system, and then I'll go back to make money. And maybe I thought I was going to do that. And I was like, because I definitely didn't sign up to be broke. You know, I definitely didn't want a life of just scratching by and getting by. But that first year teaching was the door opener to like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And I used Ms. BP's magic sentence many times. A lot of times it didn't work. I had to make up another sentence. I had to find some extra. Her sentence didn't work with most students were impenetrable to her sentence that I borrowed. And I realized that, okay, I got to try something else. And that's when I started the Ever Forward Club. So imagine I'm a first year teacher. I'm thinking about starting this program and I'm only going to be here for a little while. Why am I trying to start a program to help kids when I'm only here for a little bit to figure out how to get back to making money? Like I'm not taking a vow of poverty. If you told me when I took that picture of those young men, that first meeting we had, that Ashanti, it looks like you're starting a nonprofit. I would have told you that.
Yes.
It is impossible to get more nonprofit than teaching. But now, as a leader of a nonprofit, I can tell you that it is possible. And I don't know that I would recommend it to anybody on the sense of like trying to chase money.
When you started your nonprofit, so now the club has evolved, you're starting the Ever Forward. What was your mission? What did you hope that these young men would experience that you didn't have growing?
What I saw was smart young men who were failing classes. And because at that time I had almost forgotten what it was like for me as a kid in school to pretend like I couldn't do stuff, to be cool, I forgot that what I was watching in them was a mirror of my own self. And so Ever Forward was me just saying, look, I'm gonna meet you at lunch once a week. In exchange for lunch, you're gonna teach me how to be a better teacher. Like, I know you're smart. I believe I'm smart. So why are we creating failure? Like, whoa, because something's happening here. Because I can't do the work for you. I won't do the work for you. I'll be here every day to support you, but you have to do the work. And I think that's what happened. So I think it was like that journey of like, oh, the young men in my classes are acting like I used to act. So when they're acting out of anger, when they're acting out of like irritation that I'm asking them to take out a pencil, when they're acting out of all those things, I have to first be like, oh, I know that kid. Oh my gosh. And it's the parts of myself that I look back, I'm like, oh, I must have been a handful. Because I would use any excuse to have an argument with the teacher to keep from doing any work that they're trying to get me to do. And I'm like, the payback is real. And so I was like, okay, look, you're mad at somebody, right? But I'm not your enemy. And I haven't asked you to do anything that's not out of reason. Like, me asking you to take out your pencil is reasonable. So you can be mad, but you're mad at the wrong person. And I realized, remember, I was having to have these conversations to go underneath the anger. Because I can match the anger. I've done that too. I was actually that teacher in my early first couple of years. I'm like, you ain't going to be in charge in my classroom. So first of all, there's only one boss in here. You know what I'm saying? And that's going to be me. Now, we can get along. We can work together because I'm not here to impress you. I'm here to impress upon you the need that, look, your education is valuable and you are going to sabotage your 18-year-old self.
That's right.
Because your 18-year-old self is going to look for somebody to blame. And you can remember this sentence. It's your own fault.
Yes.
You don't get to blame me that you fail algebra when you're 18 and you can't graduate, because I'm telling you right now that you got to pick up the pencil in order to pass this class. You're smart enough to do the work, but you're refusing. And I realized that I couldn't do that in the classroom every day. I needed a place where I could have a real heart-to-heart conversation with these young men in a healthy way, safe way, in a loving way, but also sometimes in a like, stop it.
Yeah, real way. You need trust. Yes. You got to build it. That's what was going to be my next question. Just tips for people. We all have young people in our lives. What are some thoughts, aside from some of the sayings that you've mentioned, but just general thoughts on how you help young people, young boys in particular, feel safe enough to start bringing down that mask of anger and getting to what's underneath?
First, I just start with like, I see you. I know that maybe you used to put this mask or this energy on. Even back then when I started, I wasn't using the word mask. I may have used it, but I knew I was saying to them, you may be used to like pushing people away, trying to care about you. And maybe there's a reason that you don't let me support you, but I've invited you to come at lunch. I've invited you to come after school. I told you I would help you and you're not doing it. I was really just trying to get underneath, because the anger is here. Yep. If I want to match anger, I can go higher or lower.
Yep.
And I'm like, look, I'm not here to harm you. I want you to succeed. You know that I'm not here for money. I'm here because I believe in the power of education to transform your life. I chose to come here. And so the fact that you got into my classroom either means that forever, for the rest of this 180 days of school, we're going to be enemies because I'm not allowing you to sit here and do nothing. Or you're going to work with me and we're going to get along. But you can have it either way. But what will not happen is I will sit here and be like, yeah, you can just sit here and do nothing. Not in my class. So you got to find another teacher.
Yeah.
Because if any teacher who allows you to do that, you should question their caring about you as a person, as a future. And so you may in the future be like mad at somebody, but in your consciousness, you would never be able to be mad at Ashanti Branch because he didn't care about you enough to tell you the truth. And that's why my work with the students was always individual, but always a place of, and some students were like, are you a preacher? Because every time you start know, my grandfather was a preacher, but I'm not a preacher. But it was like the idea that, like, oh my gosh, what's happening here? And I think that what happened in Everforward was this space of giving young men a place to see, oh, it's not just me. It's not just, wait, how is the star football player with brand new shoes, two girlfriends, all the fame of the on the newspaper every week, how is he going through this stuff? Well, because you got fooled by what you're looking at on the outside, because you don't know what's happening on the inside. Mm-hmm. And I think that when students began to come to this community, just to have some lunch and have some real talk, that we began to build brotherhood. And that community is one of those powerful things that you can't do in a classroom. Like, I got 50 minutes, or depending on the school, I got maybe less. I got to get you a lesson, your classwork, homework, next steps, prepare for the next test. Like, I got a lot of things that get done. I don't have a whole lot of time to do a lot of nurturing and pouring into you. But at lunchtime, that was our time to be like, there's no agenda here. The agenda is what you need. What do you need? What was blocking you? What's working in your life so you can help the other young men figure out what they can do better to say what things are working, what things are going good, what things are going bad, what's your rose, what's your thorn? All the ways of us checking in were ways of saying, oh, it's not just me. And then when I can realize it's not just me, then maybe I don't pretend that I'm fine when I'm not fine. And that's this shirt, right? Though you can't see it, but it says, I'm fine, right?
Yeah.
And on the, I'm fine. Oh, yeah, like, inside, I'm fine, are all these other words.
Yeah, it's so true.
Much more going on with people than anybody can see, right? And I think because we've told ourselves that I'm fine, we're shocked when we go home and we're like, man, why is everybody else having a great day? Everybody else is doing great, and I'm not. Well, they just said what you said. So maybe if you could get real and realize that maybe they're doing what you're doing, they're putting on the mask too.
Yeah.
They're saying, I'm good when they're not good. They got a lot of accessories to the stuff that's not going so great. And you get bought
in. I read that you said that being smart was seen as uncool in your community. How, with the boys that you work with in your community now, have you seen that narrative reshape?
Still a lot of work. I mean, it's still a lot of work. And it's even more work now that young men around the country are narrating a story that's not real, right? Oh, wait, how are there... Some narrative says, well, how are there more girls in college than guys now? Well, why shouldn't there have always been some equal number of both?
That's right, right? Yes.
We skewed it one way, and now we're confused that it's getting skewed another way, and people are looking for somebody to blame for that. And I think that what we try and do with young men is to say, listen, the human part of you wants to have connection and deep, close relationships and feel appreciated and wanted and not be isolated and alone. But if you have been taught that you're not supposed to want deep connection, that you're supposed to other everyone else, that you're supposed to look for who's blame for why things are not the way I want them to be, then we'll always be out looking for the boogeyman or someone to blame. And I think that what we found, what I have always found, is that, oh, listen, do you know that inside of each of us is the brilliance of why we were put here on the planet? But if you're trying to follow those people and do what they do, you're missing out on what you're supposed to be doing here.
That's so true.
Hopefully you get it before it's too late. Hopefully you, as you're going down the wrong road, you realize, oh, wait, I'm in the wrong part of town. Like, wait a minute, what am I doing here? I don't even like this sport. I don't even like this. I'm doing it because I'm trying to follow somebody else and it doesn't fit. It doesn't fit. And I've seen it. I've watched groups of young men, and you watch a young man who's in the group who is just like, trying to keep up socially, emotionally, like status wise. And you're just like, oh my goodness, hope they find.
To me, what you're describing reminds me of so many times when people have like a midlife crisis, when men and women, where you just wake up one day and you don't see yourself at all. You don't even know who you are. You don't know what you like. You're doing everything that everybody else likes and all the shows you watch or other people's interests, and you just fully lost yourself. So to be able to contribute to the development of young people today and help them not have to go through that, imagine what they can contribute to the world if they tap into their superpower and never lose that when they're young.
That's right. And realize that I'm not alone.
Yeah,
that,
we have.
That I pretend for a good reason. Yeah. There's good reason to be pretending and to say I'm fine when I'm not. And everyone else is doing it too. So maybe I can just find this one good friend where when we have a check-in, it don't have to be fake, right? Yep. Maybe with everybody else, I'm going to be like, I'm good. And then you got this one person, man, I'm so glad you asked. Let me tell you, man, today, those days, and you know that it's going to be safe there, is accepted, respected. That's what we've been trying to create, you know? And when we created the Million Mask Movement, it was around that. It was like I wasn't, when the Million Mask Movement came, it was like basically all those stories I just told you, like in one day, like it just kind of came up, right? It was like, this group of young men I'm working with, I've tried all my magic. I've tried all my best sentences. I've tried all my best activities. They're impenetrable. The force field around them. And I'm like, well, what is going on? Like, every time we try and talk about something serious, somebody starts a fight in the room, right? An emotional fight, a verbal fight.
Yeah.
And you're like, we're not here to fight. Like, we're here to talk about, like, today our topic is, and I'm like, oh, there. Every time I talk about, we got to talk about something real.
Yeah, of course.
It goes.
It's real. Like, oh, it penetrates. And they don't want it to penetrate.
Right. He's going to try and get real in here.
Yeah,
we don't want to get real in here.
We're putting the blocks up, man.
So going.
Man, your program, you've seen so many students transform through this work. Is there a story or two that still stands out to you from the transformations that you've witnessed?
So many of them. One in particular that is just standing out to me because I'm thinking about him now. I actually need to text him today.
Oh, I love.
So he came to our high school. He had just moved in with his uncle in San Lorenzo area. He was living with his aunt, and there was some abuse going on there in the aunt's home. He was the oldest of three siblings. So his PE teacher said, hey, I got this kid. He knew I had the ever four. He said, he seemed like a really great kid, but he never dresses for PE. I don't know what's going on. I'm trying to figure out, you know, he's going to fail, but maybe you should check in. Maybe you could check in with him. I said, yeah, bring him by here. My prep is this period, same period that he had him in class. So I'm in my room doing stuff for prep, you know. He knocks on the door. I'm like, hey, come in. His athletic director, and it was his PE teacher. And he's like, hey. And I said, how you doing? So I reach out to him, shake his hand. He's looking at the ground. He's looking at the ground. And I reach out to him, and he hands me his hand. He just hands me his hand. Like, this, there's a limp fish in my hand. I'm like, hey. And I want you to shake my hand. Like, how you doing? Hello. Anyway, he whispers, hi. Shake my hand. And I said, I want you to squeeze my hand. Let me kind of feel your presence right here. And he squeezed. I said, no, squeeze it hard. Like, squeeze like you want to squeeze it. I'm like, oh, there you go. Now you're here. And so that from that day to, and so a few minutes later, we're having a conversation. I'm like, I know sitting and talking to him one-on-one is not going to work because he'll just check out. So I'm like, look, you're going to come with me. I'm in the classroom, two doors down, making copies. And so I'm asking him questions. I'm like, I'm not looking at him. I'm just kind of, he's behind me, but he's answering. I said, you guys speak a little louder. This machine is loud. I'm making him talk louder. I'm making him get into his body. And then I asked a question. I said, you know, who do you live with? Oh, my uncle. Okay, cool. When did you move to this area? It was a couple of weeks ago. Oh, okay. And then I'm like, because I don't know anything. So I'm like, well, where's your mom? And then silence. And I thought that because the machine was going, I couldn't hear him. So I turned around. And he was just looking down. Well, I didn't know which question hit because I had been asking lots of questions. So I'm like, is this about your mom? And I can see his eyes welling up. And I'm like, okay. So I just stopped the machine. I grab my stuff. We go back to my room, sit down on the couch. And I'm like, I can see he's really starting to feel you. I said, what happened? He just shook his head, no.
No.
And I said, do you need to just let it out? I said, I don't know what happened. And he just started bawling. I mean, just bawling, tissue. And I realized he had bottled this up for so long. As the oldest, would be the man of the house, an old man around. And literally for the next couple of months, several days after school, he would come. He would show up.
Oh, it's so
and
good.
And we, you know, had up coming every Thursday at lunch. He came every day after school to do homework. It began to build a connection. He began to find himself. And he was going through it. He was going through a lot. And, you know, what I can say about him now, he did, I think, two, he enlisted. He went through three tours in the Marines, two or three.
Wow.
He retired. He finished his tours and went overseas. He got married. He has two dogs.
No.
He lives in Florida now.
That is
so proud of him. I think the journey of going from that deep pain.
Yes.
and not having, and being in a family where you're told to suck it up.
Yeah, of course.
Suck it up. We ain't got time for all that. Like the night that, after I learned more of the stories, tragic, you know, but I'm so proud that he trusted me. I'm glad that Mr. Longacre, the PE teacher, trusted me and brought him, saw him going through it, knew there's a place that could probably support him. And that is one of, I mean, we're still in touch regularly. And he's been on my mind for about a week and I need to text him.
Oh.
So I will be texting him today. And I'm very proud of him. And so there are lots of young men are like that, but that's one that
is great.
Really, yeah.
Wow. The gift of just an adult in a child's life, acknowledging their pain and teaching them that letting those tears out is okay. I think, gosh, I just wish every child could feel a moment like that to know that's okay, that release, instead of bottling it all up.
There's nothing wrong with you.
No.
You're human. And there's nothing to say right now. Don't say anything. Just let it out.
That's
just
right.
Let it out.
I loved that.
Like, imagine you bottled it up for so long that it's just been storing up, waiting for a release. Like,
That's great. I have one more question and then a few lighter ones. But for this section, just what has this work taught you about your own healing and, you know, just your journey? How has this impacted you?
Yeah. So I was a teacher for 10 years, an administrator for 3. And then I went to this D school at Stanford, the School of Design at Stanford, to use design thinking to figure out how to grow this work. While at Stanford, I realized that I was building this as this little program, not thinking that it was a business. I didn't know what I was doing. I just knew that I couldn't do nothing. So when I was there, I also realized that this part of my journey is trying to figure out, where are you going next? When I finished that 1 year leave of absence, I was going to go back to my administrator job. You know, I took a 1 year for the fellowship and I was going to go back. And one of my mentors was like, well, why don't you see if you could make this work as an organization? I'm like, how? I mean, how am I going to do that? Like, I got to have a job. You know, these other people have funding or whatever. I don't know funding. Like, how am I going to? They said, well, look, how much do you have saved? And I was like, I got a, you know, 3-month runway, perhaps, you know, for me, a program coordinator and a COO part-time. 3 months. He said, well, look, you're a math teacher and you're an administrator. You can always go get a job. There's always going to be a math teacher job somewhere. So even if you go these 3 months and you run out of money, you can't do it, you can go get a job any point in any year. Like, just trust that. I said, okay, I believe that. So I was like, but it's scary. Because imagine going from on the way to riches.
Oh, of course.
Financially. But depending on the graph you look at, like, financially, it's going downhill.
Well,
right?
I hear you.
And then you realize, like, oh wait, I'm gonna go and like be a hunter and gatherer for money.
Yes,
as a nonprofit does. Like, there's no guaranteed check if you don't raise money.
That's right.
So now I'm like, wait, I'm not gonna go back to a guaranteed check. I'm gonna go to a.
I know.
Maybe if I go find the money.
Oh man, that darn purpose calling.
If I could tell people about scary moments, it was a scary moment. It was a. As I look back, I'm like, oh, wow, that was courage.
That was courage.
I don't even know how I'm going to do this. I don't know how to make this work, but I got 3 months to make it work. And I got 3 months to make it work at a salary that is just, I mean, it's just enough to, like, not go in the hole. There's not a lot extra in there. There's like the bare minimum I can make to pay all the bills I got and maybe still do one thing. I realized that was scary. And so after 3 months, we started doing workshops.
Good for you.
And it started taking off. It started taking off. And that was 2016, September, October of 2016, I hired myself. October 6th. Actually, oh my God, that was just a couple of days ago.
Well, happy anniversary.
I hired myself. I wrote myself an offer letter.
Congratulations. I said, okay. What a milestone.
Thank you.
That's exciting.
Oh, man. Hey. So 2016, we're 9 years in to this. And it's
9 years
beautiful.
In. You got past that 3 months.
Imagine that's 2016, cool. And then 4 years later, we hit this worldwide pandemic, right?
Yep.
And then I'm like, oh my goodness, right? Another moment of like, what do I do? But I'm clear today that all these things that have happened have been a journey of really staying clear about the purpose and mission. And we're helping people, you know, the Million Mask Movement that we were featuring in that documentary, that 2015-16 year was when a lot of things were happening, like me transitioning, a documentary came out, our work began to really be seen in a bigger way. And this Million Mask Movement that we have has a goal of reaching 1 million people. I don't know how I'm going to do it.
Incredible. Yeah, well, I have a few questions to ask. I call this segment Rapid Reel.
Let's
And
go.
just to get to know you a little bit more, a little bit lighter. So, what's a mask that you think that you wore for too long?
I think I wore for too long. Well, I would say that being a big guy, that eating a lot or having like not having to deal with it. I've been a big guy since I was little, right? I've been always a big guy, big kid. But it hid the fact that I was numbing with food.
Yeah,
When I went to deal with stuff I didn't want to deal with, so I just go and be unhealthy with food. And so I think a mask I wore was like, oh, I'm just a big guy. As opposed to like,
that's
I'm
good.
being unhealthy. I am using food as a crutch. And so that's one of the ones.
That's
I think the
best.
most of Matt is like, oh, he's just a big eater, right? I don't
Yeah,
know what
I
really.
relate to that. I think a lot of people could relate to that. Yeah. It's powerful to shift from a size reference and instead to a health reference. I think that's a powerful shift.
It is.
A ritual or habit that helps keep you grounded.
But me and a buddy of mine, we have a thing called our radical self-care. It happens once a month. And so we
Nice.
get together and do something self-care. He's an entrepreneur leading an organization. And so we just get together and we commit that once a month we do it. And if one of us has to cancel, the other one has to go without them. And the other person has to make it up. So it's like you don't get to not do your self-care for the month. We may not be able to do it together, but the plan is to do it together. Go have a meal, go for foot massage, like do something to self-care, go jump in the ocean. But it's a way of us checking in on each other,
Good
make
for
sure that
you.
we're taking care of self.
Is there a song that comes to mind that you put on to bring you back to yourself, amp you up, make you feel good?
Which one? There's a couple of them, man.
Yeah.
There's one right now. What's his name? It's called, wow, what's the name of that song? It Ori Asbury. It's like, there's one. There's a couple of songs out there that's like ringing in my mind right
Yeah,
now.
yeah, yeah.
The song that's probably ringing right now is "Relate" by
Oh.
Matthew West.
All
And
right,
it's like,
Relate by Matthew West.
as I hit you so hard that you feel knocked down.
When the lyrics match a good beat.
Oh man,
Yeah,
that's
it's good. I gotta
amazing.
listen to it. Give me think, you know, I asked that question a decent amount. I feel like I need to make a playlist eventually of everybody's favorites, like pump them
Yeah, that's
up,
a
you
good one.
know? Because what's one thing you wish every teacher understood about their students?
Yeah, that they're human too.
Yeah.
That because they're young and don't have jobs and careers, that they could be going through as much or more than you. That their lives are just as complex as yours. That they have thoughts and beliefs and human needs as well. And that just because they don't have a career like you, that when they go home, it may not be that's all they have to do is just go home and do homework. To really give room that there could be a whole lot more going on than you could ever know.
True. What gives you hope right now?
We have some amazing young men that are coming into our arena, our environment. What gives me hope right now is that more men are having conversations about feelings, that we're not ignoring the fact that men are human, who have human, wide range of human emotions just like anyone else. And I think that it gives me hope that as even though there are plenty of voices that are claiming that for men to feel is not manly, that there's enough voices saying you better talk about how you feel before it erupts. And so I think that the work that we're doing on this side to tell people and tell young men and boys that, hey, to feel is human. And when you shut off parts of your feeling, you become like a monster. And they lock monsters in cages. And they have no hesitation in building more cages to lock monsters in. But they don't have enough tools to help people talk about how they feel. So my hope is that more people would just remind each other that we're human. We all feel. We need to find the safe people that we can talk about those feelings with so we don't feel alone.
Oh, thank you so much. I have just one other question before I get to it. Is there anything else you wanted to mention that we missed? And then also, just let folks know how they can connect with you, how they can support your work. How can we help you with Million Masks? Like, what can we do to support you?
Oh man, if you go to millionmask.org, you can make a mask anonymously. It's six words and one picture that you draw on the little screen right there. Millionmask.org. Draw a picture, six words, three things that you let the world see three things you don't talk about as much. It's anonymous. And you can share that with yourself. You don't share it with anybody. Just create it in the system. And then if you feel called, like, tell somebody about it. Invite somebody in your life to make a mask. And maybe you all sit down and have a conversation about those masks, you know? But once you create it anonymously in the system, you know, it's opportunity for you to realize that, wow, I'm not alone, that there's so many people going through similar things. And, you know, November 8th, was that number, depending on when this, you hear this episode, November 8th, 2025, and from now on every year, in November of 2020, of each year, we will have a young men's conference, and we support people around the globe to host their own little gatherings for young men in their community. So if you have a young man and you hear this conversation, just let them know you see them. Ask them some, be curious. So that's the best to ask.
Incredible.
Of people out. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank
all
you.
Right. Of course, I will include all of that in our write-up for the show, The
Thank
Word.
You.
And
thank you.
You're so welcome. One final question. We might have listeners that find themselves wearing too many masks in their rock bottom, messy middle. When you found yourself in times like that, what's one piece of advice that you wish would have come sooner?
Yeah, I would say everyone, it happens today. But what I always have learned is that, who do I know that I can reach out to? In my mind, I'm thinking, I don't want to bother anyone. And I realized that, who would I hope would call me when they are going through something?
Yes.
And I usually start with those people first.
Yep.
Because the connection that you have with somebody who you know you're available for, maybe that's the person that you can, like, go to and say, hey, you got a minute? Got some time? And I think that just knowing that you don't have to hold it in, I think the more we find those safe people that we can go when we're having one of those days, it lets some of the steam out. So we're not walking around like landmines or just waiting to explode when the next thing touches us or happens to us. So the invitation and reminder is saying, who can I right now? And if there's nobody in the moment, it's really just sitting to myself saying, okay, I'm not alone in this. Go make a mask. Go to the website. Go see the masks of people all over the world. Put your, like, you will know that, okay, it's not just me. Because it can feel isolating and alone, especially when you're keeping it together yourself. But just know that you're not alone. And that's the invitation to people all
Beautiful.
Over the world.
Beautiful. Yeah. I appreciate you. I have so loved our conversation. And
thank you.
I'm just honored. The work that you are doing is truly such an important mission. And I'm excited to learn about it and be able to spread the word for others to support.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And for everyone listening, this week's episode ties to the Imperfect Level Up tip for explore childhood as an observer. Pause and ask yourself, what mask did I learn to wear? And what was it that I was protecting myself from? Because when we see the story behind our mask, we open the door to rewriting it. Thank you so much. Stay messy. I look forward to seeing you next time.
Before we wrap today, I want to invite you to be part of the Becoming is Messy community. Subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss a single episode. And if there's anything that resonates with you, please leave a review. Your feedback means the world to me, and it helps other people find this community. Follow me on social media. I'd love to hear your ideas for future topics, your questions, and stories from your own messy moments. And if you're feeling inspired, check out the Becoming is Messy shop, where you can grab a mug, a t-shirt, or something else that reminds you to embrace your messy magic every single day. A huge thank you to the incredible Wolves and Sheep for providing the music for Becoming is Messy. Check them out on your favorite music streaming platform. As we close out today's episode, remember this: messy is just another word for growing. So keep showing up, keep laughing, and keep making beautifully awkward progress. Until next time, stay messy, my friends.